Okay, so before I start, this lady here wants to make an announcement.
Hey everyone, I'm here to tell you about the elections. The Students Association elections are closing in 3 hours' time, so you've got a couple of hours after this class to vote. I'm here on behalf of Jameson Cash, who's standing for president. The reason that I'm campaigning for him is because I've been involved in the Anti-Cuts campaign, so he's been like really incredible at campaigning in those campaigns against the government cutting our education. So he's a really great campaigner, but he's also obviously standing for student president, and that doesn't just mean huge sweeping let's oppose the government type policies. He's got loads of really, really good policies which would improve like student life in general on a day-to-day basis, which is obviously also really important. So he wants to get a textbook exchange, so you know, you buy those massive textbooks and you only use them for one semester and pay like 30 quid for them. Just to make it easier to sell them, to buy new ones for next year. He wants to get longer library opening hours, I guess it wasn't everyone. He wants to get a student-led market so that we can buy loads of good quality local food in bulk so that it's cheaper for us, but also more ethical, better for the environment. And he's got this great idea of having international mini exchanges, so you can get in touch with students in other countries and go and stay with them by their student unions, which would save you loads and loads of money on going travelling, which would be really great. So you've got 3 hours before polls close, and I would strongly encourage you to vote because it's a really great opportunity to say what your student union does. And I would encourage you to vote Jameson Cash for president. Thanks for listening.
Okay, so. All right, so last time we embarked on reasoning, quantifying uncertainty, and I introduced joint probability distributions as a method for being able to answer any query, the likelihood of any state in terms of joint probability tables, distribution tables. But of course, there are two things wrong with that. First of all, they massively explode. The size of the table massively explodes as the number of variables you need to consider increases. And secondly, it's really crazy anyway, because in reality, quite a lot of the time, a lot of the variables you're considering are independent or conditionally independent of other variables. So rather than always doing this table lookup on a joint probability distribution, the idea is to exploit Bayes' rule so that you you kind of equate your query, the query you're interested in, you equate it with an equation of distinct probabilities that are easier to estimate. What we're going to do today, and you exploit conditional dependence in that equation. What we're going to do today is make this slightly more formal and conceptually, I think, easier to understand by providing a kind of topological method of representing conditional independence, which is what Bayesian networks do. So I'm going to introduce Bayesian networks and the way in which you can perform exact inference within them. Okay? All right, so I've said all that already, really, except for this last thing, which is that Bayesian networks are basically graphs where for each random variable, you have a node in your graph, and the arcs between the nodes represent what's dependent on what. Okay? So it's a directed acyclic graph, right? The direction giving the direction of dependence. And it's acyclic, so you can't have one variable the value of one variable depending on another and vice versa, right? You can't have cycles in these things. And and basically, there's an arrow from X to Y. We call that X the parent of Y. And so each node in your Bayesian network has a conditional probability distribution attached to it, which for every combination of values of its parents gives the probability of the node you're interested in. Okay? Now, this is in general, assuming that your DAG, your directed acyclic graph, isn't fully connected, the number of probabilities these guys that you're going to have to know is going to be way, way less than what you would have to know if you were reasoning directly from the joint probability distribution. So in our example from Tuesday, we had this dentistry domain, right, where basically a toothache and a catch could be caused by a cavity, and we had weather, okay, cloudy, sunny or rainy, which were basically independent of these things. And these two symptoms, while kind of indirectly dependent on one another, in that if you've got toothache, then given its cause, you may have a catch as well, they're not directly dependent, okay, on one another. So this is an example of a kind of dentist weather Bayesian network. Here is the example we're going to work on today, okay? So what's happening here is that we've got a burglar alarm, okay, fitted in the house, and it's fairly reliable, except let's just suppose I live in San Francisco, and so Russell and Norvig do, in fact, and so earthquakes can set these things off as well. So if my alarm goes off, I can't be entirely sure it was due to a burglary. It may have been due to an earthquake, all right? So what's happening in this Bayesian network then is that the directions of the arrows essentially is, in this particular example, I'm going from cause to effect, okay, in this case. And I'm going to talk more about why you choose to show the dependencies going from cause to effect rather than the other way around later in the lecture. But that's the way this is being represented. The conditional dependency is going in the direction of cause to effect. Right, so there are two possible causes for my alarm going off. That's the burglary or the earthquake. Now, if the alarm goes off, then John and Mary have both promised to call me when they hear the alarm. However, they're a little bit deaf, and sometimes they call me. It's a false positive. You know, they called me because they've heard something else, like a phone ringing in the next door neighbor's house, and they go, oh, that's the alarm, let's call Alex, right? So they sometimes get it wrong. And so that's factored into the uncertainty here as well. So the alarm can cause John to call, it can cause Mary to call, but not with complete certainty. So even if the alarm does go off, actually Mary only 70% of the time hears it, because she's hard of hearing, and calls me. And if the alarm doesn't go off, then sometimes she mistakes the phone ringing for the alarm and still calls me. Okay, so that's that 0.01 there. John is slightly less deaf, in that when the alarm goes off, he calls me 90% of the time. But again, he can mistake the phone for the alarm, okay? So there's a dependency here between the alarm going off and Mary calling and the alarm going off and John calling. Notice I don't have a direct dependency between them because these are conditionally dependent given the value of the alarm. Notice something else as well. I've not factored into this nodes about phones ringing. I don't have to, because I've factored that into the uncertainty, in other words, into this probability being less than one of John calling when the alarm goes off, okay? That is essentially giving me the degree to which other things other than the alarm might cause John to call me, including the phone, including other stuff like thunder, I mean, whatever noise might, John might confuse for the alarm, is factored into that 10% of the times that the alarm goes off and he doesn't call me. Oh, it's factored into here, sorry. The false positives, right? So it's factored into the 0.05, the 5% of times that the alarm doesn't go off, but he's mistaken something for it going off and he's called me, okay? So I haven't had to represent in this problem space a random variable for phones, which might cause John and Mary to call. I could do, but I've chosen not to. I've chosen just to factor it into the degree of uncertainty here. Now, all these variables in this example are Boolean variables. In other words, they take one of two possible values, true or false. And it means that in the conditional probability table, I only have to give the value of the variable being true given the combination of values on its parent nodes. I don't have to give the other value, the probability of the other value, because it's 1 minus the probability of it being true, because there's only two possible values. Okay, so the way to read, for example, the rows in this table, is that given that there's a burglary and an earthquake, the probability that the alarm goes off is 0.95. The probability that it doesn't go off is 0.05. Okay, it's 1 minus 0.95. I've just not written those because you can compute it from this little number here. Notice how for each of these conditional probability tables, distributions, you've got the possible values, you've got a row for every possible combination of values on the parent variables. So that's why there are four rows to this guy, because it's got two parents, each one taking two possible values. So that's four different conditioning states that influence the probability of the alarm, okay? These guys don't have any conditions on which their probabilities depend. You've just got the probability of the burglary and the earthquake, okay? Both of them being pretty unlikely, okay? And with John calls, for example, since its only parent is alarm and it takes two possible values, its conditional probability table has two rows, one for where the alarm is true, one where it's false. Okay? Any questions so far? Okay. All right, so this says a lot of what I've said so far. So in the general case then, when a node has k parents, you've got 2 to the k possible cases you've got to consider. That's a lot less than you would have in a joint probability distribution, right? Where you have, so long as the number of parents is less than the number of total number of nodes you've got to consider, obviously, right? So we often omit the negated value for these Boolean cases for the reasons I said in the representation of the probability table. So I don't have an extra column here for P not of A, right? Because you can work it out. And I think I've said everything else. Okay, right, now, what are the semantics of these things? Well, actually, you can view the semantics in many different ways. One is that it's essentially a compact representation of the joint probability distribution. Now, why is that? Well, because you can work out the joint probability of any combination of values of the variables in your Bayesian network by this equation. Okay, so the joint probability of x1 to xn is the product of the probabilities of the node given the values on its parents. Okay, that's just Bayes' rule. I'll get back to it in a minute, how you get from this to this, okay? But it means that, for example, given that this holds, I can work out the joint probability of John and Mary calling, the alarm being true, but there being no burglary or earthquake. Okay? And it is this. You start with the root guys. With the leaf guys. It's the probability of John giving the alarm and Mary giving the alarm, right? The probability of the alarm given its two parents, the not burglary and not earthquake, and the probability of the not burglary and the probability of not earthquake, they don't have any parents. Okay, so you just take each one of these five guys and you condition that value on the value of the parent variables. So John had only the alarm as a parent, Mary had only the alarm as a parent, the alarm had burglary and earthquake as a parent, and so on. Okay, so it's this particular product of probabilities, which if you look it up on this table here, turns out to be these. So actually, the probability of this combination of stuff being true is really, really unlikely, largely because the alarm isn't that unreliable. It rarely goes off when there's no burglary or earthquake. Okay, this number is really small, which corresponds to that one. Okay? So even though no burglaries or earthquakes are really likely, that's very likely state. The combination of that with the alarm going off is very unlikely. All right, so that basically is the first view, this one of a compact representation of a joint probability distribution. Essentially, it means you can compute any joint probability given this equation. That's essentially its semantics of the Bayesian network. Okay? Now, why does that work? Well, it works because of Bayes' rule, you won't be surprised to hear. So let's look at this probability distribution, joint probability distribution. Now, according to Bayes' rule, one application of Bayes' rule, the joint probability of this guy is the probability of xn, given the n minus 1 other variables, times the probability, the joint probability of those n minus 1 variables. That's just one application of Bayes' rule. Okay? But I can take this guy and repeat the procedure, right? So I turn this single probability into a product of two probabilities. Probability of xn minus 1 given the value of the first n minus 2 variables times the probability of the joint probability of those first n minus 2 variables, and so on and so on. I chain this application of Bayes' rule until what I've got is a chain of probabilities where the query is just one variable and the condition is the sort of previous variables before it. So it ends up looking like this, where you bottom out at the probability of x1. Now, assuming that you have ordered the joint query in the right way so that the parents of xn are always in, well, they will be always in these guys, right, in the n minus 1 variables here, and the parents of xn minus 1 are always contained within these variables, and crucially here, the parents of x2 is only x1, and x1 has no parents in the Bayesian network, then this thing equals, for these guys, always equals this, just the parents, right? So that's why, so long as you order it correctly, this thing, whoops, equals this thing. Right, any questions about that? Right, so long as you order these correctly, this equation always holds, and you can always order it in the appropriate way, given the topology of your Bayesian network. Just, you know, order it so that you do the leaves first, right? So it would be John calls given all this other stuff, and then Mary calls given all this other stuff, and then the alarm, and so on. You work your way up the net, okay? And you can do that given the commutativity of a joint probability, okay? All right, so that means that the probability of Mary calls given all this stuff is equal to the probability of the Mary calls given the alarm, because John calling, the earthquake, and the burglary are conditionally independent of Mary calls given the alarm, okay? All right? So that's the first way of viewing Bayesian networks, as a compact representation of this thing. Compact because you only have to write down far fewer conditional probabilities than you would have to joint probabilities. Okay? And really what Bayesian networks are doing is it's fully exploiting the sparseness of the search space. You know, your domain tends to be locally structured. You don't have everything directly interacting with everything else. And Bayesian networks are a topological way, they're a way of making you exploit that. And they minimize the amount of information you need to know in order to be able to infer everything, every likelihood of every arbitrary query you could ever come up with. Okay? But remember that these independence assumptions that you make as you construct your Bayesian network are basically your own doing, right? Your own design, your own instincts about what's independent of what, okay? The other thing you've got to remember is that there are many ways, even when you, even in this burglary and alarm situation, there are many ways in which you could represent its Bayesian network. Now, what we've done, like I said earlier, what we've done here is we've represented the roots as root causes, and as we go down this network in the direction of the arrows, we're going towards from causes towards effects. So earthquakes and burglaries cause alarms cause John and Mary to call, right? So the further up you are, the nearer towards root causes you are, the further down, the nearer towards symptoms or effects. Now there is a reason for that, actually. Suppose I were to go the other way, right? Suppose I were to construct a Bayesian network, starting with the things I observe, which are Mary and John calling, and sort of dynamically construct the Bayesian network by adding what causes them and what causes them one by one. So I would be going from Mary calls. I'm going to add variables to a Bayesian network in this direction, in this order, I should say, burglary, earthquake. All right, so the first thing I add to my Bayesian network then, I shouldn't do it on this, should I? I'm going to do it here because otherwise, is Mary calls. So that becomes a root node, Mary calls. Okay, there we go. The next thing I've got to add is John calls. Now, does my estimate of the probability of John calling depend on the value of this? Hands up, yes. Hands up, no. Actually, yes. Okay, yes. If I'm adding this dynamically, then given the situation, if Mary calls, it is actually much more likely that the alarm's gone off than not. Okay, so what Mary does influences what John does. So if I'm adding John straight after adding Mary, where Mary was the first thing, I do have to put an arrow between them. Now, suppose I add alarm at this point to this network. Is the value of alarm going to be dependent on Mary calling or not? Hands up, yes. Yes. Hands up, no. It is yes, right? If Mary calls, it's more likely the alarm went off than not, because they may be not completely reliable, but they are slightly reliable. They do provide good clues about whether the alarm went off. The same with John. Now, if both Mary and John call, would that boost my estimate on the alarm going off compared with just Mary calling or just John calling? Hands up, yes. Hands up, no. You'd be right, okay? If they do both do it, so I would have to have alarm dependent on both of them, okay? Because I would need to be able to distinguish in my estimate of this probability that the alarm goes off, I should be able to distinguish the state in which they both call from the state in which only one of them calls from the state in which neither of them call. My estimate on that probability of the alarm is going to be different in all four of those states, okay? So I need to represent both of those states as directly contributing to my estimate of this value of alarm. Now I need to add the burglary, all right? Well, the alarm, if I know the alarm's gone off, I'm more likely to think there's a burglary than if it hasn't gone off, because the alarm is relatively reliable. But I don't have to put direct nodes to Mary and John. This because they only, what they do affects my estimate on the burglary only in as much as it's a clue that the alarm's gone off. Okay? And the same with earthquake. However, if the value of burglary will affect my value of earthquake, right? Because if this is true, then if the alarm's gone off, but this is true, I'm less likely to think there's an earthquake as well. If the alarm's gone off and this isn't true, I'm much more likely to think there's an earthquake. And if the alarm hasn't gone off, then that also affects my
predictions about the earthquake. So in fact, I need the burglary to affect the alarm. So what's happening here is that if you design your dynamic Bayesian network so that at the root you've got effects and you're heading down towards causes, you actually end up with a much more connected network, which makes computing with it and inference with it harder. So that's why, as a general rule, you start with the root causes as the root of the network and you work your way down so that the arrows of conditional dependence and likelihood that the Bayesian network represents match the direction of cause-effect. Okay? Any questions about that? Yeah.
Yeah, in that case, one is cause or not, both are influencing each other, so shouldn't be another arrow from the one above to the one above?
From the where to the where?
Sorry. I can do the names of the person. Yeah.
Sorry?
From John Coles to Mary Coles.
From John Coles to Mary Coles. I don't have to put the arrow. In fact, it would be ill-formed if I put an arrow from John Coles to Mary Coles as well as vice versa. It would just not be a Bayesian network anymore, because if I did that, I've got a cycle. They've got to be DAGs.
All right.
Yeah? So it's all right to have the dependence going just one way. Right, once I've got the dependence going one way, it does of course mean that the probability of John given Mary does not equal the probability of John, and it doesn't equal the probability of John given not Mary either. Okay? And likewise, just by the arrow going this way, it's the same going the other way round. The probability of Mary given John doesn't equal the probability of Mary given not John. It's just that when computing this, you're going to have to not just do table lookup on this conditional probability table. You're going to have to actually compute it somehow. We'll get to that in a minute. Well, we'll get to it, in fact, next week. Tomorrow. I keep forgetting what day of the week it is. Okay, so I don't need the arrow going the other way, because that the dependence is implicit in the fact that there is an arrow. There is an implicit dependence going the other way. Okay? Any more questions? Okay. So, basically, a good rule of thumb is to go from root causes down towards effects, right? That's how you represent the arrows. And if you think about that meningitis and stiff neck thing, if you were going from stiff neck to meningitis, then in order to estimate these reliably, you'd need to know actually quite a bit more about whether there were epidemics of other diseases that cause stiff necks in your estimate of whether I've got meningitis given the stiff neck. Whereas going the other way around, the probability of a stiff neck given meningitis, well, you just need to know about the population, the proportion of meningitis infected people, how many of them get stiff necks, you're done, right? Whereas for this, that's much, much harder to compute, much harder to estimate, because maybe there's an epidemic of Lindy Hop injuries, you know. Well, that's a bad example. I can't think of any other disease at the moment that gives stiff neck. I've still got a stiff neck from Lindy Hop, so I'm a bit obsessed about stiff necks at the moment. Anyway, right, okay. So, let's crack on. Now, I mean, these are a topological representation of what's independent of what, and here's the general rule, okay? It's not, so, I mean, going back to this network, this is not saying that alarm, let's think, that John Coles is independent of burglary, right? The probability that John Coles given burglary is not the probability that John calls. It is not that. Okay? Why is that? Because the value of burglary affects the value of something that does affect the value of this. Okay? So, you know, it's that you, even though you haven't written down directly the probability of John calling, given the value of burglary. You can compute it from this, in fact. We'll get to that later. So there is then a legitimate question, which is, take any node in the network, what is it independent of? And I mean really independent of, not even directly, indirectly related to it at all. You know, a bit like this, weather really, really is independent of toothache. There's no connection whatsoever between them. But, you know, so that's an extreme example. Here, on the other hand, we have, John Calling being dependent on an ancestor. But what is it independent of in any arbitrary Bayesian network? And here's the answer, okay? Basically, this variable X is conditionally independent of its non-descendants, in other words, things like this and these guys, given its parents, these guys, okay? So it means that if you've got a variable, say, out here, W, then the probability of X given UM, UN, and W is just the probability of X given UN and UN. So that's no surprise, okay? But the probability of X given Y1, UM, and UW is not the probability of, it's you know, those aren't conditionally independent, right? Now, a node is conditionally independent of all other nodes given its Markov blanket, as it's called, and they are the parents, the children, and the children's parents. So that forms this little blanket around X, and anything outside here, right, is conditionally independent of X, given this stuff in within the blanket, okay? So that's your answer, and I'm not going to prove it to you. Just take my word for it, okay? So, That can be quite useful, actually, okay? Because it means that, well, it tells you, it restricts your search space when you're working out arbitrary queries on arbitrary conditional probabilities. Okay, so it's basically Bayesian networks are a very efficient representation of conditional distributions, right? So, you know, it's a very compact representation. But even so, and it works in general because arbitrary relationships among nodes are very unlikely, right? You do get independence, or at least to all intents and purposes, you can assume independence quite often among all the variables, among at least some of the variables you're interested in. But over and above that, when you do have a dependence, the nature of the relationship between them isn't completely arbitrary either. So now we're going to look at some canonical relationships that can happen between a couple of dependent random variables, okay? And because there are canonical distributions, you only need a few parameters in order to specify them. So while this was kind of arbitrary, right? I just wrote down a whole bunch of numbers for every particular value. And so I needed to write down four things. If it was a normal distribution, I'd only need to know two things. Its mean and its variance, okay? Okay, so the very simplest case is where the dependence is completely deterministic. So that's like logic. That's like if you've got a variable, a habitat of an animal is North America, and another variable, habitat of this animal, is the US, then if the value of the latter thing is true, the value of the former thing is true. Why? Because the US is in North America. End of, right? So those are the simple case, and they're basically capturing logical or mathematical relationships among variables. So you can have some determinism in a in a globally uncertain world, some things you know for sure, and you know, then you just infer the values, and you're going to have things like the probability of this thing is one, and the probability of this thing is naught, right? A slightly more generalization of that is what's known as the noisy or relationship. So it's not quite complete logical truth and determinism, but it's one step removed from that. So this is where you've got an effect that can be caused by any number of finite number of things. And in fact, if it's not finite, you can just add a leak node for getting the miscellaneous unlisted causes that you don't have. Okay? So finite number plus maybe a leak node to deal with the remaining ones. Okay? But when one of those causes is true, it's not a guarantee the effect's going to happen. There's a certain amount of inhibition within the system. So it's like the alarm and John calling. When the alarm goes off, it's not guaranteed John's going to call, even though there's a cause-effect relationship between them. Sometimes the cause happens, but the effect doesn't. Some other, you know, something like, I don't know, he's got wax in his ear or something and he doesn't hear it. So the probability of the effect given the cause is less than one for each of those causes. However, let's make the following assumption, which is that the things that inhibit an effect given a particular cause are conditionally independent of the things that inhibit that effect given its other causes. In other words, what makes a cause, what inhibits a cause from causing an effect are independent of one another. Okay? Then what you can do is basically the following. It really does help because it means, I'll do it with an example. Suppose fever, we've got fever, right? It's an effect of lots of diseases. Let's, for the sake of simplicity, assume there are only three, cold, flu, or malaria. Okay, but you can have a cold without having fever, you can have a flu without having fever, you can have malaria without having fever. It's just there's a tendency towards fever with all of these guys. All right? And what inhibits the cold from causing a fever is conditionally independent from what it inhibits the flu from causing a fever, and similarly with malaria, which I've spelt wrong there. Whoops. Right? So, in other words, there is a non-zero probability to not having a fever, given that you've got a cold, and similarly, a non-zero probability to not having a fever, given you've got flu. Now, suppose they're like this, right? If I've got a cold, then 60% of the time I don't have a fever. The other 40% of the time, it does cause a fever. Okay. Suppose I've got flu, then 20% of the time, I don't have a fever. In the other 80%, I do. Okay. And suppose I've got malaria, then in only 10% of the time does that cause no fever. There's no fever. And 90% of the time, malaria causes a fever. Okay. So the inhibitions then, suppose that I've got two of these diseases. How can I work out the probability that I have a fever or not, in fact? Well, because I've assumed that these are conditionally independent of one another, I can compute that as the product of the two inhibitions, okay? So that means that to work out whether I've got a fever, given any of its possible causes, there are actually only three things I need to know, and that's these three guys that I started with on the previous slide. Okay, these three distinct inhibitions. Everything else follows from it, given the independence assumption. So, for example, the probability that I have a fever, given that none of its possible causes are true, is zero, which makes the probability I don't have a fever one. Okay, here are the things I know because I've been told them, right, that when malaria inhibits fever only 10% of the time. The other 90% is going to create fever. Okay. So these numbers, the probability of fever, are always 1 minus the probability of fever in this column. Okay. Notice how they're all less than 1 because there's not a true relationship between a true cause of effect. It's not deterministic. It's just a tendency for this thing to cause this effect. And the probability that I don't have a fever, given that I've got flu, again spelt wrong, whoops, and malaria, is just the product of the probabilities of the of their inhibitions, right? As I said on the previous slide. Okay, so the probability that I don't have a fever if I've got all the diseases is really pretty low. Okay? Any questions? I see furrowed brows. Do you want me to go through this again? No. Your brain's frying, maybe. Okay? Now, this means that in the conditional probability table, although fever would be dependent on three things, which would mean having, here it would mean having eight values, I actually only have to write three of them. Okay, rather than all eight. I can compute the other eight from these three. Okay? So that's one way in which there's a kind of systematic, in which to represent a systematic relationship between a random variable and the things it depends on. Is noisy or? Yes?
But we do assume that these causes are independent to each other. So
yes. Yes, you are. You can't do noisy or, no. No, so, but this is actually assuming more than the causes being independent of each other. It's also assuming what inhibits them from causing fever are independent of each other. Yeah? Yeah, so if these were dependent on one another, no, this is, all bets are off. This only handles the case where you've got this. In your Bayesian network. So that's cold, flu, malaria, fever. Okay. Otherwise, noisy or doesn't make sense. Even if that does make sense. If you've got arrows between these as well, then you can't, it's not reasonable to assume the inhibitions are independent. Yeah.
But even in that case, even if we have only one arrow from each one of them to the fever, even in that case, maybe only a combination of the two causes fever.
Yes, but that's not the scenario we're assuming here. Yeah? Because then what you would have is that when one of them is true and one of them is false, the probability of fever would be zero here. So, we've assumed a more general case where they're all non-zero. I mean, it could handle that. You could still have inhibitions being independent of one another, but you'd know even more. It would be this sort of combination of deterministic relationship and this noisy-or relationship among the variables. But if you've got an arrow like this in your network, then noisy-or is probably not a good idea to assume that. Okay. All right. So we've considered so far largely Boolean variables. Of course, there are discrete variables like weather, which can be sunny, rainy, or whatever. And then for continuous variables, you basically wouldn't stand a cat in hell's chance unless of writing the conditional probability distribution for it item by item because it's a continuous variable. But you can write functions for them. And of course, the normal distribution is probably something you've seen a lot already. So if what you're dealing with is a normal distribution over a random variable, all you've got to know is the mean, or Gaussian distribution, come to that, the mean and the variance. The variance being the degree to which the probabilities deviate from the mean. So it's that standard bell curve, right? So assuming the mean is here, the smaller your variance, the narrower the bell, right? It will look like that. Okay, here's the mean. So the probability mass will be, the vast majority of it will be on the mean or very close to it on either side. The bigger your variance, the flatter the bell. So it will look more sort of like that, right? So in both cases, the integral, the area underneath this, sums to one, but this is big variance, right? This is big sigma. But the probability mass is more spread out away, you know, from the mean. Okay, but it's a bell in each case, right? So, you know, you've got a little hump. It's a curve with a hump. And it can be a steep hump or a narrow hump. Okay, that's a normal distribution. Bimodal ones are quite common as well. So that's basically where you have a double bell looking like that somehow. That tends to be the distribution of exam marks, for example. Or course marks. Okay. All right, so to summarize then, I've presented to you Bayesian networks, this topological way of providing a compact representation of the probability distributions in your domain space, in the thing you want to reason about. And it's much, much more compact than having to provide a joint probability distribution. What I haven't talked about yet is how you compute the likelihood of an arbitrary query given that Bayesian network. So for example, although in our network, here, we have written down the probability, we can read it directly off the tree, the probability that Mary calls given the alarm, oh yes, I know that's 0.7. What if what I'm interested in is the probability of Mary calling given that there was no earthquake and a burglary? Well, I can't read that off any table here. I'm going to have to compute it from this thing, right? So that's what we're going to talk about next week, how you do that. And not next week, Friday, tomorrow. Okay, any questions? All right, see you tomorrow.
Okay, can you draw it? Because I've just ejected my disc.
So the Markov blanket contains the descendants, the parents, the children, the parents, and the children's parents. Okay. So this is the Markov blanket. Okay. So, but not the parents, not the grandparents of the children. So long as you write all these variables in the conditioning bit in your query key, all the other variables you don't, so if we have a W here, let's call this 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, right? Then the probability of P given 1 to 6 and W equals the probability of P given 1 to 6.
What about this?
Yeah, grandchildren don't have to worry. Yeah, I mean, basically,
yeah, but
that's partly why it's called Markov, right?
But they also depend on the grandchildren.
Yeah, well, they. So P depends, right? So if you've got the grandparents, you've got a grandparent G. I don't have to think about the value of G in computing this because whatever G was is going to be factored into this guy. Yeah. Right?
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.